Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
No, I'm Christy, her mom.
And today we are going to be covering another Bridgerton spinoff. It's a book.
Book binging. Spinoff! You know you missed Bridgerton.
Welcome back to book binging.
Book binging on Bridgerton stuff. So we are doing the Belle Soap series.
It is a trilogy.
Yeah, and it's adjacent. I had the hardest time figuring out where on the timeline is. I think I know now, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
I think I know too.
But we have our usual caveats, which include that there will be cursing, for sure. There will be spoilers, because most people haven't read these books. And that we are having something to drink. What are you having to drink? We're having a drink. What are we having to drink?
You tell me. I don't know the name of it.
So we are having Trader Joe's Brut Rosé, not to be confused with another pink sparkling. I think I got you a bottle of it. But the Brut Rosé, which we hadn't tried before, is quite tasty. It's very fruity, and it's pink. And that's what really matters, because we're in the world of pink bubbly things, which includes Bridgerton. So there we go. So let's get started. I don't think this is going to take very long.
Probably not.
There are three books, so yeah, it's not much.
And I feel like it's going to be similar to like the Rokesby series, where like we have stuff to say, but overall it's just kind of it's Bridgerton.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
Bridgerton.
Well, there's going to be one book in particular that we are going to have a lot of thoughts on, because it was not our favorite.
And it's the first one.
Anyway, so we're going to be ranking the books, couples, female characters, male characters, and sex scenes, as we always do.
Yes.
And so we're going to start with the books. I'll start with my number one, or you usually start with the odd numbers.
Oh, okay.
But I could do it. It's fine. I'll do it.
Okay.
My number one is What Happens in London, which is Harry and Olivia's book. I really like it a lot. Like, I think it's very, very cute. The notes I wrote down were minor stalking, spy stuff, the staged reading, if you know, you know, adorable couple. Like, I love the energy, and I love almost every character in this book. And the one who turns out to be like a villain we never met before, and we heard whispers about, but like it wasn't like that big of a deal. So I'm glad it wasn't like a twist villain of any kind. It's more just like, oh, it's this one guy. It's like, oh, okay. and who we never met, and so we don't have an emotional attachment to, but we don't really need one, because all we know is that someone's in trouble. And so I like how they execute the espionage aspect of this book, or how she does, Julie Quinn. You're listening, I'm sure.
Yeah. But she cares about us. There are some other Julia Quinn books, by the way, that popped up in my
library. Yeah, I know. We'll
have to look at
that. There's like a duology for like a thingamabobber, for like a Duke thing.
Yeah, How to Marry a Marquis and stuff like
those,
that. Yeah.
Those I also want to read. It's a trilogy.
They're on the list. But getting back to this, so yeah. So
and I want to start another book, but I don't want it to be like something boring.
Okay.
So anyway,
go quickly.
What Happens in London, I really love the espionage. Like, it's more of a backdrop, but there's a reason why the characters are involved the way they are. Like,
it's organic.
Harry works kind of like some pro bono work, I guess,
it's not pro bono.
It's not pro bono
means you're not getting paid.
Oh, he definitely didn't get paid. I don't know what I was thinking.
I don't either.
I was trying to sound smart. Anyway,
I
severely failed.
No.
Anyway, but he's doing some work for the kind of in secret for the
War Department. The British government.
Yes. In the middle of the Napoleonic War.
Yeah. And he had been, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Because he can read and translate Russian and Portuguese.
Russian and French.
Oh, and French, sorry.
Right.
He knows a little bit of Portuguese.
He knows a little bit of a bunch of other languages.
Anyway.
We'll get into the guys. We'll get into them.
Former soldier. That doesn't really play a huge part into his character, but yeah, and I'll
it
talk
does.
A little bit more
yes,
when I talk.
It does.
It does, but it less so in his backstory. It plays
we'll
into the kind
it.
Of character he is, but less into what kind of backstory we're shown. If that makes sense, the main backstory we're shown for him, and I'll talk about it more when we get to him as a character, is his father's alcoholism. But that's more of what we're shown, not the Silcher thing. But either way, I really love the couple. I think they're adorable. That's my number one.
Yeah, it's my number one as well. There's a lot of brightness, there's funniness. I mean,
Hilarious.
there's a lot of comedy in this. There is like you said, organic stress. The damsel in distress stuff is plausible under the circumstances, not wholly plausible, but comparatively. And I really like I love them as a couple. They are adorable.
Now, one thing I will say in that I didn't love is, well, I didn't love how rushed the ending was in a way,
Yeah,
but
we wanted to see them
also,
marry and have sex.
yes,
Okay.
I wanted that for sure, but I also wanted an epilogue, and we didn't have an epilogue for the first two books. I only had an epilogue for the third
For the
book,
third book. That's
which is a
all I had
shame
too.
because I look forward to the epilogues.
Right. The epilogues are fun. And I will say we get a little bit of them as a couple because they are also shown in the third book.
A little, yeah,
A little bit.
that's cute. And I wanted that energy.
Well,
And
right. And I do think that factors into why, Olivia is a well-developed character too.
yes.
So yeah, so
Olivia's
that
in all three.
yeah. And I really liked that one the best, What Happened in London. Number two, I get to do number
Yeah.
two first, and that would be 10 Things I Love About You. It's the
Yep.
third book. And
Me
I,
too.
again, I really love this couple. It's a little less balanced as a couple
Yeah.
than the one than What Happens in London. This is Sebastian and
Annabelle.
Annabelle's book. And their relationship, and we'll talk about it when we get to couples, is a little less balanced, but there's still a lot of cute, there's a lot of sweet. And we'll talk about the characters, the why I love this book.
Well, we'll
Yeah,
talk about
we're
that when
gonna
we
have to
get to
talk about,
characters.
yeah,
But yeah, mine's also 10 Things I Love About You. And my number two is the things I wrote down, Sebastian. Just in general, I love Sebastian.
I forgot. There's one thing I really love about this, which is it is like a, again, it is a parody of itself.
Yes.
So that is a major like reason that I enjoy this. Go ahead.
Sebastian rivalry,
Yeah.
unique lust triangle. I wouldn't call it a love triangle on
No.
some ends. And twists with the uncle. So, especially at the very end.
Yeah,
There's a
that's pretty
moment
funny.
where you think he's dead, and then it's just like, surprise, I'm not. It's like,
It's,
oh, okay, I guess we don't have to figure that out.
yeah, it's pretty wild.
That there are fewer characters that I like in that book. Like, I don't like more of like the side characters. Whereas like in
They're kind of meh.
like the grandmother. I mean, I liked her
Yeah,
energy at the end, but not necessarily
she's like
throughout.
Pippin's grandmother.
Yes, very much so. If you've ever seen the musical Pippin.
Yeah, it
But
makes sense.
so yeah, it's that energy. But whereas in like What Happens in London, you have a lot of other stuff. Like you
Oh,
have
there.
Sebastian.
Well, you really just don't have all the characters I agree with you are really good in that
And What Happens in London, you
London.
also have the prince, who is just so fucking funny to me
He
towards
is,
the
and you got
end.
Vladimir. Vladimir's great
Vladimir
too.
is
We're gonna talk about
amazing.
that when we get to characters, but
Anyway,
it just is really pretty.
yeah. So my number three
Yeah.
is, I'm sorry that we're not like describing the books a lot. Honestly, like we're just trying to streamline it. And if you haven't read them, why are you listening to this podcast
Other
episode?
than you love us and we love
And we love you too. Thank you so
you
much. But
too.
you need to have read the books to really understand what we're talking about.
Well, we can explain it as we
We
go on.
don't want it
Keep
to be a
going.
2.5 hour one, clearly.
Right. Keep going.
So number three for me is The Secret Diaries of Miss Miranda Cheever.
Yeah.
So in this book, there's a childhood crush thing that never goes away. Unplanned pregnancy, stubbornness, won't say I love you, nearly dies in childbirth. And
Which are
so
all things we don't like.
yeah, and yeah, it what I felt like from this book was that it was ripping off other Julia Quinn novels a lot. Like it had the Lucy almost dying in childbirth
Yeah,
thing.
it
It
did.
had a knockoff of When He Was Wicked in as a sex scene, which I'll
Yeah.
talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
And it also kind of gave off of the Duke and I a bit with the
There was
unplanned
a
pregnancy thingamabobber and also the
bit.
forceful thing. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It's not my favorite. I don't think it's my least.
Right. Maybe if we're gonna go in the big Bridgerton universe, it's not my least.
It's
favorite.
Not my it's least not my favorite, least favorite
but for sure.
It's yeah. not my favorite for sure, but
it's not my favorite, but it's not my least favorite for sure.
Whereas I think that like at least What Happens in London would break maybe my top, surely my top 10, but definitely, but maybe even top five.
Yeah.
I don't know about top five.
I don't know about top five. But I definitely see it being a top 10 book. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I told you you would. And then, so that's my number three. Well, you're number
that's
three.
That's my number three also. And for a lot of the same reasons, I will add that there are like no real redeeming qualities to the hero in this book.
We'll talk about it.
And we're going to talk about it, but it's kind of, and it's disappointing because he's built up in a way that you would think that there would be. And it just doesn't play out that way. But in any case, there's a lot of sex in the book.
Yeah.
There's a good bit of sex.
We'll
I'm shrugging
that,
here.
We'll
I know that our listeners can't hear it, but it's like,
we'll see how that ranks in the sex scenes category. Yeah. So couples, my number one is Olivia and Harry.
Oh yeah.
They're adorable. I love them so much. I love their energy. I love them talking through windows at each other and throwing things at each other.
They are adorable. I mean, and
forming like a book club.
Yeah.
it's so funny to me.
I'm sorry. Did you want to keep talking or are we going to converse about this?
We can converse.
Okay. So I'm part of what I'm
because I know it's
about,
your number one as well.
Well, I think we're going to bring things pretty much the same way.
Yeah, I think so.
So Olivia and Harry are really great because first of all, they're happy people.
Mm.
Even though Harry's got, you know, a lot of bad in his background, his father was an alcoholic to the point where like all of his siblings were trying to escape from the house.
His brother's turning into one. Which never gets resolved.
But we don't hear about a resolution, but he seems to get healthier.
Yeah.
And part of the reason he gets healthier is Harry kind of takes him in and kind of, you know, sets him up and keeps an eye on him and those kinds of things. But we also, because Harry starts to understand that he has a familiar role that he didn't have, like, because he'd never seen it modeled for him.
Mm.
His sister was considerably older. She left, like, got the fuck out as soon as possible.
Can't blame her.
His brother's significantly younger, and so they're all kind of separated. The mom he had growing up was completely tuned out, just not engaged at all. And dad's an alcoholic, which it's not really an uncommon dynamic in those circumstances, but he also, on top of it, was a soldier in the war.
Yeah. He has his own PTSD to worry about.
Right.
As well.
And so there is significant trauma but he has managed it. He's dealt with it. And his means of dealing with it, and this is
he never drinks.
Well, it's not just that he never drinks. He also, in the process of having this relationship with Olivia, and it's again a situation where they make each other better, he has this revelation with his brother, and then he realizes, I can do this with Olivia. It's like she should not have to go through her trials and tribulations, which consist of a prince being in love with her.
Not being in love with him,
and him being one of those arrogant people who just takes what he wants kind of thing.
And also powerful.
Right. And you know, she's extremely beautiful and people kind of force themselves on her because of this.
Mm.
But his thing is that he realizes I need to be more responsible. I need to be more present.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he gets it. He's a really smart guy. He's very funny.
Mm-hmm. He has a dry sense of humor that
he does,
especially when paired with Sebastian, who's just so outwardly funny.
Sebastian's super fucking funny.
I love Sebastian. Mm-hmm. We'll talk
Everybody
about him more
loves
later,
Sebastian.
As they should. Mm-hmm. And his energy is just like off the wall, bouncy puppy, but like a cool puppy
with PTSD.
but like you have, and then you have Harry over here who's dealing with things like a sane person but also throwing himself into his work in a way, and then once he starts getting distracted by Olivia he starts breaking from his usual like rut,
his routine,
and his routine, and he really is better for it, and Olivia just makes him better. He makes her better and more of a, less of a fucking bitch in front of people. Because she really just says stuff directly to people. Well,
and they do such a great job building this relationship. Like, they start reading, and we've mentioned probably Miss Butterworth.
We have to.
The must
I got it for you from Mother's
Day. Right, so then there's a smut trash novel, a gothic romance novel that is referred to in Hyacinth's book, which of course, you know, it's like, ooh, it's something
that's something in that book. It's something that Catherine would read in Northanger Abbey.
Right. And it's also something that she is reading to Lady Danbury.
How utterly horrid.
Yeah. And it's very, very funny. It's fun. It is hilarious that it exists, but, and it has a major role in a couple of these things, but part of what happens with this is they start reading it to each other because they're next door neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she has been told, you know, some gothic romance type gossip about him, like he killed his fiance
that
or
he
something.
Never had.
Like, yeah, he don't never had that started.
Like, and that's also like showing the power of gossip and how it can shape people,
right,
and what you perceive them to be. And when they first meet each other at this party, I'm sorry, this is just going to be turning into us like talking about this book, but it's so good and so really much better than the other two. I'm sorry, yes, it just it is. And so they like meet at this party, and he's now been told that he needs to look after her and the prince, since the prince has his intentions more towards
right,
her.
Right, because he's concerned that the prince
is a spy, is for,
spy
Russia.
For Russia. Yes,
and so he's not, by the way.
But this is Harry's assignment.
And he's like, oh shit, it's that weird girl from next door keeps staring at me. And he starts teasing her, but he like starts hinting at the fact that he knows that she like saw her, and she starts freaking out about it. And he's like, did you like the hat? I did that just for your benefit.
Yeah,
I thought about dancing a jig. It's so fucking funny.
Right.
Very Hyacinth and Gareth energy, where they're two smart people who just can get under each other's skin in the best way.
But they also have great senses of humor, and they recognize that they're doing it. So it's not ever mean-spirited.
No, it's very funny.
And they, you see them enjoy it.
He reminds me of his backstory is a lot like Marcus from Marcus mm-hmm. from Just Like Heaven.
Yeah,
with
my Smith book.
Yeah, and he acts a lot like Hugh from Some of All Kisses. He's very, very smart like that.
Yeah,
and he also gives off Gareth energy with his humor.
So it's just like a combination
of all these heroes that we love.
Harry. And we will talk about that.
Yes. And
we're sitting here holding stuffed animals.
Is he an animal? We don't know.
It's a bibble.
And he doesn't have an arm. I don't know what happened to him. Anyway. Okay. Anyway. We love Olivia and Harry. They're adorable. And there's a moment when she becomes like the damsel in distress, but it's not really her fault.
No.
It wasn't like a stupid Lucy way.
Right. But she's taken captive by someone who is against the prince.
The Russian ambassador.
And they're going to hold her ransom because they believe the prince is in love with her. But the prince has already figured out that she's in love with Harry. And he's already given up on her.
Oh, I'll also have to mention the reading scene in a minute. Go ahead.
Right. That kind of rolls into her book. But still.
But it's on its own.
Right. So she is taken captive during a ball right after she and Harry have sex for the first time, and they have
how
sex.
Dramatic is that?
The reason that they are doing this at a ball is because they just can't keep their hands off of each other.
Oh, it's
and,
so good.
And they're about to get engaged because he had really planned, like, I'm gonna wait till tomorrow. I'm gonna.
And, you know, no, and she like, he knows that he's gonna propose to her.
Right.
She's like, she's
just
like,
not
like before they
propose.
Have before they have sex. She's like, are you gonna propose to me? And he's like, not
no, she's, no. What she did. It is a statement.
You're going to propose to me. And he's like, mm-hmm. It's a lot like George and Billy's first time of like, I'm going to marry you. And she's just like, uh-huh. And it's like, okay, perfect.
Let's go.
But like, she's just like, you are going to propose to me. And he's about to say yes, or I love you, or whatever. And she's just like, nope, I want to be proposed to in the right way. You're going to do it better than this.
Just nod if the answer is yes.
Nod if the answer is yes. Yes. And then she's like, okay, we're going to do it better than this shit. Yes. Not in the middle of a party when we snuck up on her.
It's adorable. It's adorable. Actual.
We'll talk about that in a second. But like also talking about this book, I'm so sorry. It's just so cute. I want to reread it now. It's but so cute. I will reread it.
I read parts of it today.
I'm on Labor Day weekend. I'm going to reread it.
I have time.
Anyway, but like he, there's this one moment when they're having a book club and the whole guys, the reason the book club was kind of created was that he was trying to come up with a reason to visit her. They had talked about the book, the gothic novel. Miss and Butterworth. He had one, Miss Butterworth.
And the Mad Bear.
Yes. And he brought it over, and there's so much dick measuring in this book. It is funny between him and the prince.
Yes.
Because when the prince sees him as an adversary, it's just so funny to me. But then there's this moment where he has just visited her, and I think they were like making out or something or other.
Yeah there's kissing.
She goes to like freshen up and the prince arrives and she's just like, oh, I was just bringing her a book. And and then he's like, what book? And then he's just like, read it to me. And then it's like, okay. And so he starts reading it. Sebastian comes over because he was looking Harry's cousin.
I want to clarify, Sebastian is Harry's cousin. He has a reason to exist in Eastern.
And he usually goes over to Harry's house
in the morning for breakfast because Harry has a good cook.
Yes. And so Sebastian comes over and he's just like, hey, are you reading Miss Butterworth? I'll read it. And he's a lot like Marianne of just like, you're reading it wrong. And
no, so, do it like this.
And so he literally gets up on a table and starts acting it out. And because he had mentioned in passing that he has read all of them and he likes them. And so
they're all kind of like, well, that's weird for a rake. Yeah, for a guy who's
so open about that. Love that for him.
Yeah.
But so they leave Harry and Olivia leave. Well, Olivia comes back, and by then
she's right at the doorway. She doesn't all the way come in.
The maids are surrounding him. Her butler is watching.
Surrounding Sebastian. They're all watching Sebastian.
The prince and Vladimir are all watching. Vladimir is his bodyguard. They're all watching him act this out, and some of them have tears in their eyes.
They're like, oh, it's so sad.
The butler is so into it. It's so funny.
Right, and this gives Harry an opportunity to take Olivia off in another room and make out with her again.
Yeah, it's great.
There's a crash because Sebastian falls off the table and dislocates his shoulder. Because
Edward came in at one point.
Yeah.
Edward, Harry's little brother. Who lives with him, and he came in and like was helping. It's just funny. It's a funny scene.
Helping act it out is very.
It's what stops them from like fully having sex. They hear a crash and they're just like, "What the fuck was that?" And then they go in and it's just Sebastian who's like broken his elbow. It's just funny.
Well, then he's dislocated his shoulder.
Oh yeah. And Vladimir just like sets it and.
Yeah.
If I were to say one thing, it's that to put in perspective, Harry has not told Olivia about the fact that he's trilingual. Mm-hmm. And because it's important to his work, but he doesn't want to like clue Olivia into the fact that he might be involved in any of this.
Well, he also doesn't want Olivia to inadvertently say something to the prince.
Yeah,
hey, he understands you, you know, because that's what girls do.
And so he, I don't think Olivia would do that, but either way.
If he told her why she shouldn't, and he can't tell her why she shouldn't.
That's true, that's true. And so either way, there's a moment after, like, Vladimir, like, knocks the door down. They found Olivia. They like help her out, and
after she's been kidnapped. So
she hears outside the door like two guys speaking in Russian. At this point, Harry's revealed to Vladimir that he can speak Russian, and they've kind of already like resolved their conflict of just like whatever.
Right, because Vladimir's also a spy.
Yeah, so it's all good. And so
for the British,
not for the Russians. Right. And so they go and she hears these Russian voices the voice is outside speaking Russian, and she's like thinking she's about to get killed. And they get the door open. She sees Vladimir, and she's like, "Oh shit, Vladimir's in on it." And then Harry comes walking in speaking Russian, and she's just like, "What the fuck?" And she thinks that he has something to do with it, and so she doesn't trust him right now. And this happens over a very short period of time, but he does eventually explain after he gets shot in the shoulder. it's a lot, but then there. Let me just mention the proposal really quick before we move on. The proposal happens again. They're like at the windows, like talking to each other, and he has arranged for her father to meet at the window at a different window. And he asks for his permission to propose to her. And he's like, "Yeah, sure." Her mother even joins in at one point. And he's just like, "Hey, I'm going to throw the," it's very, very cute. "And hey, I'm going to throw the ring up to you." And she, like, on purpose, she doesn't catch it so that they have to meet in the middle. And so they make out. It's really cute.
Yeah, it is adorable. And
I wish we had an epilogue.
Well, right. And part of what, and I don't think we said this, Harry's grandmother, who is also Sebastian's grandmother, was a Russian, she was Russian nobility.
Mm-hmm.
And she insisted on all of her grandchildren, you know, speaking Russian and French, because those are the only two languages she thought were okay. She didn't like English. And so that's part of the reason both of them, but Harry more so because he likes languages, they're fluent in Russian and in French. And we find out in book three that Sebastian has a whole pile of languages too.
Also, at the end of this book, we find out that the Russian prince was so in love with the Mad Baron books, like the mm-hmm. that like whatever series,
yeah.
And he's now Harry has left his war department thing, his job at the War Department, and now he's just translating the Mad Baron series into Russian for the prince for like a lot of money. It's so funny. I love it so much. Like everything ties together at the end. It's great. Yeah. Anyway, couples. Who's your number two?
Couple. Yeah, that's really pretty obvious. It's going to be Sebastian and Annabelle. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking of Roosevelt. What? I don't know why. And the reason for it, and I think this is really pretty obvious. Sebastian is fucking awesome.
He's hilarious.
He's better than Annabelle, but Annabelle is not. And this is Natalie. Kind of, I almost thought it was going to be spoiled. Like she was telling me, I wasn't going to like Annabelle that much, and I like her way, way better than I. Because the way it was being portrayed to me is that she's like a Lucy or a Poppy. And
no,
she's,
but
she's a tiny bit weak. I will give you that. She is a tiny bit weak, but she is funnier and smarter, I think, overall than either of them.
What I meant by she's similar to Lucy is that her situation is similar to Lucy's.
Yeah, she's gonna be forced to marry an old guy.
Yeah. Because of a family thing, she's being forced to marry someone she doesn't want to. That's
right,
what I meant.
Right. And there are creepy old guys involved in that.
But there's actually a reason why. It's because of money.
Right, right. And that is, it's true for both of them. I think the difference with, there are a couple of things with Lucy, like she doesn't have, Lucy has some outs that Annabelle doesn't. Mm. So like Lucy has, hey, you could ask your brother to check on these things. She doesn't. Whereas Annabelle has nothing. She has no one she can go to other than her creepy, lustful grandmother, who is just basically like, and we find out at the end, is trying to marry her off to what turns out to be Sebastian's uncle. She's trying to marry off to Sebastian's uncle, who is somebody that her grandmother had an affair with and gave birth to his child, who is one of their uncles. It's like, it's crazy shit. I don't doubt that those kind of crazy relationships exist in the aristocracy or the nobility of Ton or whatever. I'm sure it did. That doesn't Garrett? Make it. Yeah, maybe. but yeah, those kinds of crazy things happened. We hadn't seen it up close and personal like we do in this one. I do think that there is a more lighthearted touch with this than there is with Lucy and. Yeah, Lucy and Gregory, it just feels heavy
to me. And I don't know why. I don't know exactly. I think some of it is Sebastian's just so fucking funny and charming.
Yes.
Very, very well-written character. Mm-hmm. And he is.
No.
All right. We'll say. But he's great. And so that they are my second favorite couple because of that. There's a little bit, I will say, there's a little bit of, not creepy, but Annabelle is voluptuous.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get the sense that she's the kind of, we've got Olivia, who is just drop dead gorgeous, gorgeous. And then you have Annabelle, who is voluptuous. I guess the comparison.
She's hot.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good comparison. Is it like Sophia Loren and Marilyn Monroe?
I think it's more of a Marilyn Monroe.
She's the kind of person that no one stops staring at her breasts, or guys don't stop staring at her breasts.
Fuck you, men.
I'm
kidding, but okay. Like it they. Judge her at first glance because of the size of her breasts, right. Which is stupid.
Well,
and they just, yeah. Oh my God, the uncle is so awful.
The uncle is really horrible.
He like gets her up against this wall and he's just
more
groping
than once.
And
more
being really, really gross. And
he tries to rape her.
He does.
At least she's
strong enough to fight back. And that's what I wrote down
right.
for them.
She
it's
does.
Like they fight for each other and they
yeah.
like fight against the uncle.
Right.
And they know what
they
want.
They have a common enemy.
Yes, they also know what they want.
A known covenant. An enemy. I can talk.
An sure. enemy?
An enemy.
And so I think that also there's not a question. It's not a love triangle, like I said. It's a lust triangle of like they both know that they want each other, but you always have the other part of the lust triangle, the uncle, trying to get in between them. And as soon as they think that they have made him go away with like a scandal of them potentially being together because they talked to each other at the opera, and during which Harry and Olivia snuck away to have sex, and then came back all ruffled.
Like doing stuff in the coach before they got there.
Oh, for sure.
Like she shows up, they talk about like they sneak into the back of the opera box and Olivia's got her hair kind of mussed and Harry's
that's always a bit
kind of all over.
It's so funny. And again, why didn't we get the epilogue? But either way, yeah, that's just such a shame. But either way, I think it's just we spend a lot of time on the lust triangle, and that I think that's why it's not my favorite. Well, there are many reasons why, but I think the uncle just creeps me out so much. And he's such a main character that I'm just like, I don't know. I kind of want to focus on Sebastian. And I want Annabelle's personality not just to be, oh, well, I have to help my family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just seems a bit one-dimensional in a way sometimes,
yeah.
except for
yeah.
Sebastian. Sebastian's all over the place and we love him. He's three-dimensional for sure.
Yeah, he definitely
but, but Annabelle feels a little bit less so.
Correct.
And also Olivia and Henry seem like three-dimensional characters to me.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely, yeah.
Speaking absolutely. Of one-dimensional characters,
let's get to Miranda.
And Nigel, he likes to be called Turner, but I'm going to call him fucking Nigel because I fucking hate him.
And I would do that except I have a friend named Nigel. I just can't.
No, that's fair. Turner.
Turner.
We're not going to associate them together.
Yeah, you're not.
Either way, I just, for these notes, little note things, for Olivia and Henry, I said, adorable. Annabelle and Simon, Sebastian, fight for each other. Miranda and Nigel, Turner, fight with each other until they wear down.
Yeah.
That's essentially the entire story. Of like, she's, okay, so the deal with Turner is that he was married to this one girl he thought he was in love with and who loved him. But it turned out the only reason why she married him was because she was pregnant with another man's child. And when that...
She's fucking horrible. You get the sense that he was a much better person before this.
Yes. But we never meet that guy, do we?
No, we do not. We just assume that based on the very little information we are given about really either of them. We aren't given a whole lot on that.
She loses that child, but then she continued her affair with the other guy, so she got pregnant again.
It was multiple.
Either way. And then she fell off a horse like Scarlett O'Hara's child. And
yeah, like while she's riding to her lover, she falls off a horse
and breaks her neck. And we start at the funeral and Turner's just like, good riddance. And it's like, oh shit, like out loud. Like it's not even an inner dialogue. It's just outwardly that, like, I'm not, she will not be missed.
That is not a turn off to me.
That's the biggest of his sins, in my opinion. I think he has every right to be upset with her. And so then we go over to, like, okay, so at Olivia and her twin brother Winston's birthday, 10th birthday party or 11th birthday party, we never really talk about Winston, which is really sad. I thought he would be the other lead, but I'm glad it was Sebastian. Sebastian's so much better. But
So Winston and Olivia are twins. Winston, we are told later, is interested in Miranda, but no, she goes for Dickett. I'm sorry.
I wish she weren't with Winston. Either way, so Miranda has a childhood crush on Turner when he like takes her home from the birthday party because her father is a neglectful asshole.
Yes.
And he just does not care whether his daughter lives or dies because her mother died and he's just so into Greek. Like, I don't understand that.
He's
a Greek
historian. He studies artifacts. He spends all this time doing basically transcriptions from ancient Greek.
Anyway.
And so he's never present. He doesn't send a coach for her. He doesn't really care if she's home, you know, the thing, whatever.
Anyway, so years pass. And even after watching Turner get married and widowed and all that stuff, she still is in love with him. And she keeps these diaries because he suggested it once to her, as you do. And so she's just constantly being like, I thought of him today, blah, 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 blah. Like you do when you're like a middle schooler. But she is fully in her teens and maybe 21 or something. I don't know. But either way. Jesus Christ. So I hate this story, but
because I was going into it thinking I'm going to like both of them.
She's staying over at Olivia's house as she usually does. Her family is basically, again, it's like a Marcus thing of like he doesn't stay with his family, he stays with his friends' families,
right?
And so they are she's constantly at Olivia's house, and they're best of friends. And Olivia's a great friend to her.
Olivia's awesome.
We'll talk more about her in a second. But so Miranda's over there and she comes downstairs after she sees the study door, there being a lamp in the study or something. And it's Turner getting drunk after the funeral. And they make small talk and then he's very, very drunk. And he starts forcing himself on her. And not that it's entirely unwanted by her, but it's really unfair in many ways. It's an imbalance of power that's not good. And he eventually stops. And then he's like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have assaulted you. And
that kiss to me is one of the weirdest things that happened.
It is truly so weird. I don't know why it happened. When I read that, I was probably in the same room as you. And I'm just like, oh my god. And she's like, is this what this is supposed to feel like? It's like, no. And so if you have to ask her that question, no.
Okay, but what's extra weird about it is that going forward, she's not automatically turned off by him.
No. she still likes him a lot. And so they have this whole thing about like they're kind of like snipping at each other. He's still a dick. He's way more of a dick now to her, even, but he's also territorial.
Yeah,
which is like when she's like going out to have fun with Winston, he's just getting like, I'll come along. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Well, right, and you know, like he wants her, but he doesn't want her, and you know, I understand like there is an internal dialogue for him where he's like, this must be like very, she's so very sheltered. This must've been a really weird, you know, couple of days for her, between, you know, Winston being interested and me kissing her.
I don't think he's thinking that deeply about her feelings.
I should apologize. No, he's like a gentleman would apologize. I should apologize. And he's supposed to be trying to apologize and he just makes it worse. Like, I was attracted to you. I didn't desire
to. I hope he didn't think that I thought you were hot. And it's like, what? I don't think you know that wasn't why I kissed you that night. It's like
I was just drunk,
and then she's just in the they're stuck in a carriage together for another 2 hours, and she's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and then even then, still not completely turned off, and so they're at this
neither party. Of them is completely turned off by this conversation.
They're at this house party, and they're sent on a scavenger hunt.
Oh wait, she tells him that. She loves him.
Yes, there, when they she go, does. And then he doesn't say anything. Anyway,
he responds not at all. Who the fuck does this?
This is maybe a third of the way through the book.
Oh my god!
And a lot has happened already. A lot happens in this book. They go on a scavenger hunt.
That's good.
No, they go on a scavenger hunt through some fuckery. They get paired together. AKA Olivia wanting to hang out with a different guy.
Yeah, it's like, I would hang out with the cute guy, not my brother. Which I can't
fair enough. For, yeah. Fair enough. Me and my brother would just bicker the entire time. Anyway, so they are wandering around the house, and then they get this clue, and she thinks it has something to do with the hunting lodge that's like maybe a 15-minute walk away. And so they start walking, and it starts to rain, as it does when you're near a hunting lodge. And you get a When He Was Wicked knockoff sex scene where they're trying to get like warm, and then they have sex.
Well, right, and she's like, no, yes, no.
no,
yes.
Singing in the rain, I'm sorry.
It is, sorry.
Anyway. Okay, Lena Lamont. Singing. Anyway, stop.
Sorry.
Anyway, so they have sex. And then he's just like, well, that's done. And then he's like,
he leaves the party, this house party.
And then he goes to Kent for a different house party. Well,
so this is how bad this exchange is. She's like, well, you're going to marry me now, aren't you? He's like, probably.
If you're pregnant, I guess.
Yeah, let me know how that goes. I'll see it in London.
It's kind of like a Simon thing, but worse.
It's way worse because they're not married.
Well, yeah, like, but it's also like similar, as in he goes away for like 2 months to Kent, which was supposed to only be like a 3-day excursion to Kent to go see his friend. Ended up being 2 months. She finds out she is pregnant. She goes
to Scotland.
Well, she goes home first. Finds out she's pregnant. Olivia comes to visit her and be like, why aren't you back in London? Because they're supposed to be having their season.
Right.
And Olivia figures it out. And
she's pregnant, but not
she doesn't know who yet. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, okay, well, we need to go to Scotland right now. Olivia's a great friend. She doesn't freak out too much. You need to go to your grandparents in Scotland. And she's like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. They go up to Scotland. And then once Turner gets home, back to London, he's like, why isn't this girl waiting for me? It's like, fuck you.
Two months. And he hasn't written. He hasn't done anything to get in touch with her.
And neither has Miranda. However, I can understand her idea way more. He doesn't want to be with me regardless.
Oh, right. Because what he said is, I'm going to marry you. I'll see you in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't. He
disappears and doesn't write to her. I wouldn't write to him. I'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah, and she is like, fuck you, when he goes up to Scotland. And there's a great scene with Olivia. Olivia's just gotten back to London from Scotland, and she figures out it's him, and she's so pissed off at him.
She hits him.
She's like, I love it so much. I love Olivia. So she's pissed off at him. She's kind of like the Billy of this book series. In my opinion, I think she's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's just pissed off at him, and then he goes up, and she's like, "You better make this fucking right." And because last time she was with her, she was pregnant. It turns out she's lost the baby.
Yeah. Olivia thought that Miranda was still pregnant.
Yeah, she didn't know, and it's not really her. It's not really up to her to know that, but either right or to keep track of that because she tells
him, "You made her pregnant. You're gonna fucking marry her. You need to go.
Go to Scotland right now, bitch."
And he shows up and Miranda's not having it.
She's not seeing him. And I love the butler.
Well, right. The butler. The butler like belts him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. But part of, I like Miranda's response initially, but it goes on far too long.
It does.
Like she goes through this, I'm not gonna talk to you. And she's very huffy. She has these like women's rightsy fight thing, and we'll talk about her. I, you know, just like it goes on way too long. Yeah.
I can understand her initially doing him.
Yeah.
But then when he finally gets in, she's just like, I lost the baby. Again, very Daphne.
Yeah, you can leave.
It's like, I lost the baby. I'm not your responsibility anymore. You can fuck off because clearly you don't want to marry me, or otherwise you wouldn't have left for 2 months. And he's just like, no, I'm still going to marry you. It's like, but it's not, but you don't understand why. Yeah. Like, it's not like out of, if we had thought, okay.
If we thought there was any relationship between the two of them,
if we thought that he had a change of heart while in Kent and had a Simon realization of, oh, I love her regardless of the baby or whatever that I didn't want initially, that would be one thing. But you don't see the change of heart. He just came back from Kent and now is just like, no, I made a promise. I'm marrying you.
There's no, and the thing is, we also have not gotten to know him in a Simon kind of way. Like, we know the Simon backstory, and it's not that he doesn't have a tragic backstory, he does, but it is a tragic backstory that he should not be taking out on this basic child who he knows has a crush on him, and he even says it, and yet he's indulging this crush. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
And so he's just like, no, we're getting married, and then he wears her down enough to be like, you know, and like, even when she initially refuses, and her grandparents kind of tell her, well, what the fuck are you doing? You should take that offer.
But he's also going to be the title holder. He has his own residency.
He's going to be an earl. Like, and so, I mean, fair enough. And he already is a Viscount now. Mm-hmm. And he has his own estate. Yeah. So,
she's pretty stupid.
But I can understand her being like, out of principle, I don't want to marry you because you're being an absolute dickhead. Do I want that for the rest of my life? No.
Right.
But given her circumstances, it doesn't make much sense. Right. Either way, so she eventually wears down and she's like, yeah, fine, I'll marry you, I guess. And so they go to, I almost called it Rosings Park, it's something similar, it's Rose something,
Roseland or something,
Rosalind something
with roses, because she paints one of the rooms rose color, so it's Rose something.
So they go and he like fingers her in the carriage, which, okay,
it was oral, but whatever.
Oh, was it? One of the two. Anyway, he doesn't fully concentrate.
There are a lot of sex scenes in this book.
Yay. Yeah, it doesn't make up for the horrible story. But either way, so they make it back, they consummate the marriage or whatever, kind of like a Nicholas and Georgiana, like, we'll do it the next day in the morning. Whatever. It's like, whatever, but not as cute and not as sweet.
No,
and we don't
care.
There's no cat head. Anyway, that makes it sound like a cat's giving her head.
I can say a bunch of really obnoxious things about pussies.
Anyway. Anyway. Oh my god. If you don't have, I love it. I love to think about like people who've never heard of any of this stuff.
Listening
like,
to this.
Just listening.
Oh god.
Anyway, so they consummate the marriage. She actually ends up being pregnant this time. Well, she was before, but either way, she's pregnant and she's healthy along the way and she's able to keep it. And he's being really lovey-dovey about the child. But not about her personally. He's just like, oh, yay, my baby. And it's just like, and you're here too. And he's like patting her on the head.
I'm so glad I married you.
Not saying I love you. Or he says stuff like, I love being married to you. And it's like, okay, well, can you say you love me? I mean, it's essentially very, very similar.
I understand this. And we did talk about this. So I feel like his tragic backstory being that he was in love with the woman he married before.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets married and he's betrayed immediately. And so he doesn't trust his own instinct for what love is.
I think that's fair, but...
So what happens is that he's afraid to use the word even when he knows what the real emotion is.
Still goes on for way too long. He leaves for 2 weeks.
Like,
he leaves for 2 weeks. He comes back and he's like, maybe I do love you, actually. But at this point,
she's giving birth.
But she's also pissed off at him. Like, she's talking to Olivia, or wait, no, they had a big fight the night before he left or something.
Right.
About how he has not said that he loves her.
Yeah, it's right before he leaves.
And she's just pissed off at the world. She's fully pregnant. She's so...
Hormones happen.
She's so upset. And I cannot blame her.
Hormones
happen. And so... he comes back after the 2 week sabbatical thing. He comes back a little bit early, and she's just like, "Oh, you're here, great." And she's trying to
glad she can make it.
She's kind of trying to ice him out, and then she's still trying to ice him out to the point where, like, she's at dinner, her waters have broken. She is fully having contractions, and she won't say anything just out of spite.
I will say this, having been, I'm starting to think I have like no nerve endings or something, because, you know, people talking about like these early contractions being painful, it's like, they weren't painful.
Everyone's different, Mom.
They are.
Anyway, whatever. It's like, be grateful.
I was in court.
And be grateful. I didn't hurt you. Anyway, morphine hurt you. Anyway, she wasn't a drug addict. She just doesn't react well to morphine. Anyway, speaking of awful things happening during childbirth,
she nearly bleeds out.
Yeah, like Lucy. And it's very similar.
Because he suddenly realizes he loves her because she's gonna die. This is bullshit.
It's horseshit. I don't like it.
Gregory's not doing that.
And I was gonna say it's similar.
12th kid.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of similar to Simon's parents. Like his wife's just bleeding out, and he's like, "My child." And it's like, what? Yeah. Are you kidding? But then he's just like, wait, no, I do like her actually.
It's not like that. He loves her, and he doesn't even see the baby until
Olivia, I think, has the baby or something. Because Olivia's a great friend. And either way, and then he's just like sitting with her afterwards. She's fine. But imagine it just ends with her dying. it's not that kind of book. Anyway, she's just sitting there. And there, he's
although
just like,
if it were written by a man, it might be.
There was, I know.
Proceeding.
Either way, so he was like, "I actually love you." And she's like, "About damn time." And he's just like, "Okay." And that's the end of the book.
Love you.
I'm kind of glad there wasn't like an epilogue.
Well, right. And there's also like very little mention of them in the other books other than, good. Hey, she's going to have another baby. Hey.
Well, except for Olivia, who's talking about her nieces.
Her niece and the next one
on the way and stuff like
and
that.
And how she loves them, which is great.
Which makes Harry feel like he shouldn't. Here we are talking about them more. makes Harry think that he needs to visit his sister and her children.
Well, Olivia's like, it's basically telling them that. It's like, look, hey, you're sisters got
you love your family go
and you've
go
never love met them. Them
there's a lot of love to go around, man. Go love them. So those are the couples.
Yeah.
Female characters, my number one is Olivia.
It's pretty obvious by now, we really love
she's,
Olivia.
She's clever, kind, she sticks up for the right people at the right times in the right
she's
ways
funny. She does not use her beauty in any obnoxious kind of way.
She's aware of it, but she's not ashamed of it exactly. She's just
comfortable on her own skin.
She's very comfortable in her own skin, but she doesn't use it like, okay, she when Miranda and her are coming out, she kind of enjoys like having these men like sheep at her beck and call, being like, "All right, who wants to get me a lemonade?" And all of them go. Yeah, and then she's like, I have little tricks like this. But they're harmless.
Follow me for fucking.
They're absolutely harmless. She's like Hermione if she was cool.
Yeah.
And smart.
Yeah.
And pretty. Yeah. Not that Hermione isn't. No, she's supposed to be, but it's.
But here's the thing about Olivia. She, and people say this. So in the third book, Annabelle and her cousin, whose name I can't remember, are walking in the park.
Oh, yeah,
and they run across Sebastian and Olivia walking in the park. And the girl, the cousin, says to Annabelle, "Look, don't be put off by the fact that she's really beautiful. She's actually pretty cool.
She's cool. She's nice. Don't worry about it."
And so, like, when Annabelle meets her, she realizes, like, oh, that's
and she Olivia about. Quickly becomes a confidant. Yeah, so as she does, she's just very trustworthy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's awesome. I love Olivia. She's the best character in these.
Oh, I don't know. I love Harry.
And Sebastian. But I don't know.
I like Harry best.
We'll talk about it in a minute.
Yeah,
I was debating too.
Yeah.
Either way.
Olivia's number one. Number two is Annabelle.
Yep. She's selfless.
She is selfless to a fault to some extent, but she's tough. She's strong. And when it comes down to it, like
when she is offended by the uncle for the, you know, the time that makes her like her snap into place, she can fight for herself, and she does. And she can fight for Sebastian, and she does. So I feel like, and she has these cute things. Like, she has seven younger siblings. They have a lot of discussion about that.
They have like superlatives.
They do. It's like,
who can outrun a turkey?
Yeah. Who's most likely to win at darts? You know, those.
She also has those numbered lists that like are one consistent through 10
or whatever. And that starts at the beginning. And apparently something Sebastian does as well. So it's very cute that they have that in common. Obviously, I will say this up front, I like Sebastian more in this relationship, but she's not terrible. She's not amazing, but she's not terrible.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
Miranda's number three. She's naive, hopeful, and stubborn, and she also has this weird feminist arc that comes out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, so
it doesn't fit her character all that well, really, in my opinion. It's very Eloise from Bridgerton season 2 in particular.
Argumentative for no fucking reason.
Yeah, and it just... Olivia's just trying to be like the smart one and be like, hey, maybe we shouldn't argue with this random shopkeeper who has rules.
Yeah, like,
the fact that the rules are arbitrary, they're stupid, but just give it up.
Yeah, it's like, it's not your bookshop, so you don't get to make the rules. It's smooth the fuck off.
I'm sorry you wanted that copy of King Arthur Girl, but you need to get over it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's that.
Yeah, now, I will say this about Miranda. She's not stupid.
No.
So I don't dislike her because she's stupid. I dislike her because she is stubborn. Like, she gets the bit between her teeth about, like, absolutely everything, including I love Turner, which, what the fuck? You, Winston's there? He's a perfectly good guy and cute.
But Turner.
She's in London, she doesn't give the time of day to anybody. Not, you don't get the feeling that there are a bunch of people begging to have dances with her, but they're all of the Olivia leavings, right? Mm-hmm. You're standing next to Olivia and they're like, hey, let's dance too. It's not nice to be the second person. It's kind of like Hermione and
Lucy.
And Lucy. You know, it's not nice to be in Lucy's position, but it's not terrible to be in that position.
No, either. There could be much worse.
And she doesn't take advantage of that at all because she's just so
she's not really in Lucy's position because she has a guy who's really interested in her.
Yeah, who's cute.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
Male characters. I don't know. I guess it is Harry.
It's Hary.
I do love Harry.
I love Harry. And the reason that it's Harry and not Sebastian is that Harry's not a flippity jibbit.
What a word.
But he's not. He is solid. He's directed. He's direct.
Self-disciplined.
And one of the things about Harry that I like over Sebastian. So Sebastian kind of is one of those guys. And the way he disciplines himself is that he has this horrific relationship with his uncle. His uncle, who is Marquis,
whatever.
So the uncle, just to give some clarity to it, the uncle has lost his heir. His son has died, and so that means that the title would go to Sebastian unless the uncle marries and begets a son.
It's like if his father could do, and is his quote-unquote father,
yeah,
could do anything about Gareth's inheriting the estate.
He would if he could. He wants to get rid of Sebastian as a possible heir. So he's trying to get married and have a baby boy and cut Sebastian out, which is why he's so intent on marrying what turns out to be Annabelle. Because Annabelle is...
She has childbearing hips.
Yeah, she has childbearing hips. She's from families, you know, like with tons of siblings. And so they assume that she's fertile. And she's probably got the curves, so they assume. When they fight about stuff, Sebastian's way of dealing with it, and they describe this pretty well. He was a sniper in the war. He is somebody who is cool, calm, and collected, and does not engage personally. He doesn't he doesn't engage with someone directly. He kind of comes at them from wide angles. Mm. And I've known people like this that, you know, they come across as charming or funny or whatever, and but never actually just come up and say, "You're not doing that." And so because he holds it in and redirects in so many ways, when it actually comes out, he gets in an actual fight with his uncle, which is
fair.
About fucking time. But Harry wouldn't have let it go that far. You know, and I think that that's the reason I like Harry better. Is like, hey, yeah. Harry would have.
Well, except for that one time where he pushed the Prince of Russia up against a wall. But that was because he was under awful circumstances. He couldn't find Olivia.
He has no tolerance for people who get drunk.
Agreed. Yes.
And that's his trigger.
And the prince like pours both of them some vodka, and he's trying to hand one to Harry, and Harry's like, "I don't drink." And he's like, "It's just vodka." And it's just like, "No, I don't drink." And he's like, "All right, I'll drink both." Yeah. And then I'll just keep drinking. And then Vladimir ends up just being like, "Oh yeah, I'm just gonna take you over here. We're not gonna take him with us to find Olivia. We're gonna leave him. He would talk anyway. We're not gonna deal with that." Mm-hmm. But either way, I think it is Harry. What I put down was daddy issues, smart, trilingual, and brave. Very smart,
brave, and direct and funny.
I love his dry wit.
Right, he's got all the things going on.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Sebastian has many of the things going on. Some of them are far more charming, probably, mm-hmm. than Harry. But I think when it comes down to just being a solid day to day guy, I think Harry wins over Sebastian.
I agree.
Sebastian's the hot dude, though.
He's also very consistent.
It's not like I'd say no.
But like. For Harry, I think that he's also just very consistent throughout the book.
Yeah.
Whereas with something in her dialogue, he's very consistent in his beliefs. And not that Sebastian isn't, it's just Sebastian is a little bit morally gray of like, yeah, also with all of the married women.
Yeah, he's
and
works with anything that moves, is what it comes
literally.
To. And that is a negative.
And then he's about to like, he starts making the moves on Annabelle, not fully, but like a little bit, and they do kiss, but it's a consensual kiss, it's fine, but it's just like
she starts it most of the time
because she just had this horrible like first makeout thing, groping awfulness with the uncle, and so she goes out in the middle of the motion ball,
yeah,
and
goes out onto Hampstead Heath, mm-hmm. and it happens that Sebastian was supposed to be hooking up with some widow there,
yeah, and she comes upon him,
but she's like, "Hey, kiss me."
Comes upon him anyway,
not
like that, not yet,
literally.
Not yet,
yeah.
Later. All right, yeah. So Harry is definitely number one for me. So number two is Sebastian. He's hilarious, dramatic, and brave. Again, with Sebastian, it's just an interesting thing that we saw a lot of his facade in the last. Give me a second. We saw a lot of his like charming facade, and it's genuine, but he keeps a lot inside. Like, he's an insomniac. He has a lot of PTSD from the war. And so when he's like triggered by shots and like stuff like that. And he keeps a lot of it bottled up, like you said, and then he like kind of explodes. But not often, and so that's when it becomes real scary when he does it. And so, but he's also very resourceful and thinks really quickly on his feet. Like, if
he has inner resources that we need to talk about
in a second, give me a minute. One last thing about the end of the book, he has the fight with his uncle, and he proposes to Annabelle in front of everybody, and she says yes, and then. That night he's going to sneak into her bedroom to like obviously hook up, because of course they want to, and he finds her with a hot poker in her hand and his uncle on the floor looking dead, and so they're just like dead. And they're like, okay, we have a plan, we're going to have to wake some people up, but we're gonna do it. It's just very
we'll
funny.
Move the body,
yeah, we'll move the body. He's not dead. It's not actually extremely similar. Yeah. Like his uncle was coming in there to rape her and put a child in her in one way or the other. It was bad.
Vomit.
And it's just it's so
he's
bad.
So vile.
Disgusting.
He's like 70. It's disgusting.
Fine, if you want to reveal it, fine. Do it.
Okay.
So one of
the best things about Sebastian is he has a very, he has a great vocabulary in part because he's an author. And it turns out that he is the author of these Sarah Groyley novels, including Miss Butterworth and a bunch of other ones. So he, part of the reason he is so vested in these books being liked and bought and all that stuff is because he writes them.
I spoiled that for you, but I don't think you remembered it.
No, you told me, and I did remember it actually in the middle of the second book. I was like, oh yeah, it's him.
Yeah.
Like where he's standing on the table, like, oh yeah, Sebastian.
Okay. Yeah.
And so he acts it out, but he is very much this charming person. And some of it is because he thinks in broad story, somewhat fictional way. But
as in a way that's better than reality, right, but also worse.
But, but it is not that far off, because this book is very like a Sarah Gorley novel would be, because we've got Annabelle in these situations with being groped by the mad Marquis or whatever. It's very similar to a gothic novel, but with a sense of humor and a wink. And so that part of it is great, and is great because Sebastian is that guy and he pulls it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he makes, again, and we like this in couples, and he definitely makes Annabelle better, but she makes him better too. Like, he's suddenly not interested in like 10,000 women anymore.
Yeah, impressive.
And we get that inner monologue of him realizing, like, I've never made love before because it wasn't love, you know, that kind of
thing. That was just sex. This is love.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
which is nice to see.
It is nice to see. And it's also nice to see, like, he has this growth. Part of the reason he became the author is because he had PTSD from being a sniper.
And so he's insomniac, and he spent his hours awake,
like, doing, you know, just stuff. Yeah, just like he would start hearing these, you know, coming up with narratives based on what was going on around him, descriptive things about what was actually going on around him, and then he'd just like elaborate on it and make it cooler or creepier,
mm-hmm.
as the case may be. And so he is charming and funny and well-spoken, and
he's concerned about telling Olivia and Harry
because they don't like the books. They've been making fun of the books this whole time, and Harry's like, oh my god, I gotta translate more into Russian, oh my god.
And then he's just over here like, crap, they don't like them. Yeah. But then at the end, I really love that
he's still writing
Annabelle. Well, yeah, but also Annabelle finds out, and she's like, oh my god, yeah. I love that.
Yeah, she doesn't give it away, she guesses.
Yeah, no, like, it's great, because he's starting to like describe things, and she's just like, it sounded like you. That's how I figured that out. Damn, dude, wow.
Yeah, it's really
hidden depths.
Hidden depths is very, very cute. And finally, Turner.
Number three, Turner.
Who we hate.
What I wrote down was ex-wife issues, unreliable, Sir Philip if he didn't have any kids and liked to party, and stubborn.
So yeah, I agree with he has Sir Philip tendencies for sure.
Let me abandon my wife.
Yeah, he just doesn't have much of a redeeming anything. So if we had known him, and we talked about this, if I were rewriting this book for them, sorry, Julia Quinn, we love you in so many ways, but truly this could have used some modification. One of the biggest ones is I would have liked to see more character development of Turner outside the context of this horrible marriage. So
I agree.
All we get is this one event at the 11th birthday party where he says something nice to Miranda about how she's going to grow into herself and be beautiful someday. They clearly have had contact over the last 10 years while he's been, you know, like off and married and whatever, because he comes home and they see each other and they talk about being friends and blah, blah, blah. But we never saw any of it. And we don't see any of that in their interchange or in the way they interact at all. And so suddenly out of the blue, like, his wife dies and he's kissing her. It's like, it feels very, very strange that that would happen. And then it gets progressively worse and weirder. And so he could have been a character we'd root for. He's not.
Yeah, so yeah. I agree. I think it's kind of like the Edward problem for me, of like, we don't know who he was before the amnesia, or
yeah,
why
Edward was noble and sweet.
I'm never saying it's similar to this problem I have with him, not him, the character himself. It's the same idea of, oh, he was this kind of person before, but then something changed. It's just like, okay, well, why can't he be a nice person, though? just because his wife died, who he didn't like anymore.
No, but he doesn't trust himself in love.
And I think that's fine.
I get that. But we don't see any self-realization for him with that ever. I mean, when he flips the switch and decides that he's in love with Miranda and has been all this time, it's not a realization that he and she never says it either, partly because she's young and she should be more articulate than she is. But what I would have wanted in one of these confrontations is, stop treating me like I'm your dead wife.
No,
you're
angry
with her. But
she fully said that.
But you're angry with her.
Yes.
And you're taking it out on me.
She did say that. But she did mention, stop acting like I'm your dead wife. Don't do that. And but I also think that it's a lot of self-hatred because he wasn't able to catch all these things about his ex-wife. And I think that if we did a little bit more of a discovery from like using Miranda's point of view of like him talking more and more about to Miranda, and her telling him all the things that she loves about him that are deeper than just, oh, you were nice to me that one time or whatever. Like if she told him all the reasons why she loved who he was before and who he is now, and he started a journey of self-love and healing from that awful experience with his ex-wife, then I could see them getting together and that being a healthy relationship. What they have in the book is not. And I think that that's a damn shame. I think if it was like a journey of self-discovery and learning to love yourself as well as another person.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of self-hatred there.
Yeah.
And also a lot of hatred towards his ex-wife, but warranted. Mm-hmm. I think that if he started to see himself in the way that Miranda saw him before, and like I think they should have shown him the diaries earlier.
Yeah.
Because they show him at the very end and she's just like, here's everything I love about you. And it's just like, I saw you that eating breakfast one day. It's like
a fucking year that you've been married.
And so I think that it would have made more sense to show him that, like maybe at the halfway point, he starts seeing himself in a different way, seeing her in a different way, seeing like all the little things that she loves about him on a deeper level. Then he can have the self-discovery of, oh, I do love this person. I love the way they see me. I love the way I'm starting to see myself.
Yeah.
I can make steps. I can take steps to become that person again. The person who I've been really meaning to be and wanting to be. The gentleman who could make this 11-year-old girl smile.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, that's a weird way of putting it. But, you know what I mean? It's just someone who can make a good difference in the world,
yeah,
and not just be a fuck up. And so I wish it went more that route. It didn't. Anyway, sex scenes.
There are more of them.
No, my number one is 10 Things I Love About You.
Really?
Yes. I'll talk about why. It's kind of a similar thing to with the Daphne and Simon thing. There's a scene in that book that is similar, that is sex scene adjacent, that I don't like. And so it has to be ranked lower. But 10 Things I Love About You, they have the first makeout scene in Hampstead Heath.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the lake scene. And then they have the after nearly murdering someone scene. And it's nice.
True. And again, from a intensity perspective, there are more intense scenes with them
because Sebastian's experience.
Yeah, because
more experience.
No, it's because she allows it.
Yeah,
Because Annabelle, like the very first thing, he's going to kiss her gently because she's a virgin and blah blah blah, and he's not going to do anything more than that, and she needs to get back, and he doesn't dally with like innocence and blah blah blah, and then she's like, "Is that all?
Is that it?"
And he's like, "Oh, like, wait,
oh,
a minute,
are you ready for more?
You're ready for me? Okay." And so you know, that is very much part of their dynamic is that she is
always up for something more.
Yeah, she's always up for something more than you would expect under the circumstances. So there is greater, there's more stuff happening.
Yeah. What's your number one?
My number one is what happens in London, and it's because I just love Olivia in here, I realized that there is only one full penetration sex scene in that book.
I know.
And I would love to have more of that. But they're even funny about that.
Oh, like, I love that it so much.
It is a great, great, great scene. They, like, go off during this ball. And, like, they take off everything during a ball. I'm like, dang, they're, like,
that's why she has to go to the bathroom and gets kidnapped.
Right. But, like, they take off everything. But Harry's, like, folding things neatly.
Oh, that's so funny. I forgot about that. That's so, like, cute.
You're so neat about this. She's like,
would you mind doing my dress?
Maybe there's a role for you as a house.
And then he's like, oh, I'm colorblind. Yeah. I would be a good
lady's maid. I can be a lady's maid. It's fine. He's like, oh, you know, colorblind. I can't do that. Colorblind. She's like, oh, that would be a problem.
That would be a problem.
They are so funny together. And I feel like that element of it's just lovely, and so yeah. I really just love them together. I like the sex scenes in 10 Things I Love About You, but that and the kissing scenes they have are really, really good.
Yeah.
In What Happens in London, so it's a tough call, but I'm gonna give it to What Happens in London.
Yeah, I do love when it happens in What Happens in London, and that's why it's my number two.
Despite the quantity,
yeah,
number three.
I think What Happens in London, there are so many cute little things of, like,
yeah.
There's a reason why, and the one thing that's keeping it from the number one slot for me is quantity.
Yeah,
it's only because I want more. Like, I want to see those two interact more.
I do too.
And I want to see.
I agree.
What else they could have done. And because I know Julia Quinn has an air to do a lot more, I think that would have been fun. So What Happens in London is my number two. Yeah. Number three, despite quantity, is The Secret Diaries of Miss Miranda Cheever. I don't think any of the sex scenes except for one are bad. The first makeout scene is extremely aggressive and gross.
Yeah. And that's the problem. This kind of sets the tone for the rest of their encounters. And despite the fact that there are, and what is described in the physical descriptions of it aren't bad.
No,
I just don't like them as a couple, so I'm just not as engaged in it. So whatever.
Yeah,
so
there are things I like about the descriptions. It's more just like I don't like them.
Yeah, I don't either. It's a shame. But in any case, do you want to try to rank these books in the overall Bridgerton universe, or is it too hard right now?
I think that we should hold off on doing that until we read a few more. And okay. Like, because there's like the ones that's like called Minx, ones called, there are like a few, like Catching a Heiress or Marquis, yeah, or something.
Like that.
There are a couple more. And then there's the Duke of Wyndham series, or whatever. No, there's a duology. No, it's a duology. Oh, yeah. There's a Duke of Wyndham.
Sorry, thing. You're gonna hear more.
There's going to be more. I think that we should wait until we do like those,
and then put them in context.
So, yeah,
yeah. But I can definitely see What Happens in London being pretty high.
I see it too.
In the overall scheme of things,
because I just love them together. I think they're.
I do too.
They're a lot like Sarah and Hugh to me. Of, yeah, just like I really love their interaction. Oh, I want to reread that one now.
That's a good one.
I'll
be honest with you. I like Olivia way more than I like Sarah.
I agree. I think Sarah's a little too overdramatic for me. Yeah. Olivia is a lot more level-headed,
yeah.
But she also can, like, get carried away of just, like, she...
But she's funny.
She reminds me a lot of Hyacinth, of, like, yeah. She can be very direct.
I like Hyacinth better.
So I like Hyacinth better, but, like, I do like Olivia a lot. But,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I do, too, but we are going to rank these sometime. Mm-hmm. But thank you for listening. We are really, honestly, going to get back to Peaky Blinders.
Season 5.
We've got to finish up season 4.
We finished season 4.
Oh, that's
four.
What we did. We recorded. We just haven't, it hasn't gone out yet. So, yeah. So, we are going to get back to Peaky Blinders. It'll be season 5 and then season 6. And
then it'll be over.
Movie. But we haven't done any of the movies. We haven't done Downton Abbey movies. So,
true.
Whatever. So, that's fine.
I'm re-listening to our Downton Abbey podcast right now.
Goodness, man. I'm just saying wow. In any case, we hope that you join us
and
cheers. Cheers.